from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. America is struggling with its K-12 education system, with a job market stuck in low gear, with skyrocketing costs of higher education, with growing inequality. One group of institutions is quietly taking on all of those challenges and more: community colleges. Their doors are wide open. They offer an affordable education, teach skills employers want. This hour on Point, heads of community colleges on the fight they're waging for America. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Have you gone the community college route? Did it work for you? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We have leaders of community colleges from around the country with us today. From San Antonio, Texas, Bruce Leslie joins us, chancellor of Alamo Colleges, a group of five Texas community colleges, serve more than 90,000 students each semester. His student body, 30% white, 58% Hispanic, programs in aerospace, IT, security, manufacturing, health professions. Bruce Leslie, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. Pleasure.
From Zanesville, Ohio, Paul Brown joins us, president of Zane State College. His community college serves more than 3,500 students a semester, fields ranging from healthcare, engineering, business, energy. The college has two campuses, both located in southeastern Ohio's Appalachian country. Paul Brown, thank you for being with us today.
Pleasure to be here, Tom. Thank you.
Great to have you. And with me in the studio, Pam Ettinger, president of Boston-based Bunker Hill Community College, with a main Charlestown campus and three satellite campuses. Bunker Hill has more than 14,000 students each semester, day, evening, weekend, web-based programs, very diverse student body, 33% white, 28% black, 22% Hispanic, programs in business administration, IT, early childhood education, nursing education. Pam Ettinger, great to see you. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Tom.
Pam, think with us for a second about your role, the community college role, in the American economy and American society these days. I've heard you talk about how it is at grips with things that are unraveling on many fronts around your doors.
It is. And if you ask any community college president, I think, around the country, they'll say to you, oh, career, transfer, development, education, those are the things that we do. But I think deeper than that, community colleges are pivots. We're democracy's college, right? So we receive the traditional students from high school, whether they're prepared or not. We receive non-traditional students coming back, second chances, and so on. And what we attempt to do at the community colleges is to be that pivot. We make sure that they're ready for the next step. A lot of our students are first-generation students with no history in their families or their community of what it means to go to college. And they're also challenged by social issues. We're a representation of what's out there in the community. We do not select. So we end up providing a lot of wraparound services. It's kind of like embedding social services in learning so that as they grow academically, they will grow financially and then also socially so that they become native to the college culture and to really their next step of where their life will be.
Bruce Leslie, in San Antonio, do you feel that backstop role in your community colleges, your five?
Yeah, you know, our average age is about 26 years old. We're really an adult institution. We certainly have younger students starting in 14, 15 years old with our early college high school programs and our Alamo Academies, which is a work-based program for large corporations like Toyota and Caterpillar, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Rackspace, companies like that. But we call them swirling students. These are students who come in and come out because life is always their biggest challenge. Raising a family, being a single parent, trying to get to work on time and balance all of that with, frankly, challenging economic situations that many of our students face. And then being able to go to school, try to finish their degree. A lot of our students take up to 10 years. In fact, I'm often saying to those who are somewhat critical of the fact that we don't graduate everybody in 2 or 3 years, you know, you should be giving us gold stars for graduating people for persistence after 10 years. Often we have students who graduate with their own children because they're 40, 50 years old. So we have people coming and going for a variety of reasons, not only to come here and get a two-year degree or a one-year certificate. Many of our students already have baccalaureate and even master's degrees. They're trying to get really productive work, and whatever degree they earned at university just hasn't worked for them. So we do a lot of things for a lot of people.
I'm struck by that in the reporting here. Four-year university graduates then going back to community college to get actual job training. Many roles here. Paul Brown, how do you see, overall, how do you see your role there in Zanesville and beyond in your college, community college?
Well, you know, Tom, we're looking at not only preparing students for the jobs that are available in our region and the jobs of today and tomorrow, but we believe community colleges should take a hand in the regional development. So bringing businesses in, bringing high-paying jobs in for those students that we graduate with highly technical skills. So I think, you know, as far as, you know, we take a very broad look at preparing students and preparing the region for development. So, you know, our placement rates are very good because in our particular area in Appalachia, if you have a professional credential of any kind, be that a certificate or a degree, 6 months after you graduate, you have a job. So 90% get jobs in their primary field of study, 99 overall. So those are good statistics of our graduates. However, we want to continue to grow the region, and so we want to bring more jobs in as well. And about a third of our students also transfer in a 2+2 fashion to universities as well.
A big conduit role there. You know, Pam, when we think about four-year college, it can be very expensive these days, some very fancy. It's kind of like going off to Disney World for a lot of people. I mean, it just is, you know, lots of facilities. Everybody talks about climbing walls and, you know, everything else. It's kind of like leaving reality in some ways for 4 years. Community colleges tend to be right in the midst of reality. Talk to us about the very particular challenges that your students, you know, when you say that these are democracies colleges, all are welcome, the cost is relatively low. What are the challenges that your students bring with them when they come through your doors now that may reflect on the country's challenges?
Yes, I think a lot of it Bruce has referred to. These are first generation or immigrant students, or they have come from a certain area in the socioeconomic scale where they have not a lot of resources. So some are some come hungry.
Literally hungry.
Literally
not just
hungry.
Ambitious, but
right.
Hungry.
We have a company that donates stale bread to us. And I can go in at 8:30 in the morning and see that, you know, mountains of bread in the hallway, and they'll be gone by 10:30. So all of having enough money for transportation, just having enough stability in their environment to be able to focus in the classroom.
What do you mean by that?
You cannot learn if your child is sick and you have no one to care for them. You cannot learn if you don't know if you can pay your rent for next month. A lot of our students, we're an urban college, mm-hmm. so we reflect the urban environment. Mm-hmm. So our students can be, you know, honor students coming out of high school with all kinds of resources and they want to be close to home. Or they cannot have a home. Homelessness is an issue. So in order to have sort of an even playing field for all of our students, we have to stabilize one end and challenge the other to do better.
Without you, what are they facing?
They are facing nothing, and that's the scariness of it. There is no road. There's no one to build that bridge or that road for them.
To get into a job, to get into society, to find stability, a home, a regular family life.
Yeah, I mean, Bruce and Paul both refer to job training and all of that. But to me, it's an even more philosophical understanding of what we need in society. A job is a means to an end to me. It's a means to an end to having a social role, having social engagement, and the civic engagements that makes America what it is.
Citizenship, in a way.
Citizenship. Mm-hmm. We're educating citizens.
Not the legal definition, but then the fullness of the meaning.
Absolutely. I mean, to be able to reach out. One thing, though, that I think we have to be careful when we talk about community college students, they bring in challenges, there's no doubt. Mm-hmm. But they also bring in a great deal of yearning for learning. their strength and power and persistence to be able to live or have no home and yet come to class and complete what they need to complete. It's an incredible strength. And I think the country needs that strength. We just have to get it out of the latent state and actualize it. And that's what I see as democracy's college's role.
Bruce Leslie in San Antonio, do you play that role of taking students who may have next to nothing around them in terms of support or resources and getting them on a path toward engagement?
Yeah, Pam has done a wonderful job of kind of giving that broad sense of the challenges that we face. A couple of examples. We work very closely with Goodwill Industries with their clients so that Goodwill provides the supporting background that they need to be able to literally survive, get the food, get the clothing, the transportation that they need.
Goodwill Industries, I think of secondhand clothing when you say that. What do you mean? What do they do?
Well, Goodwill Industries does a lot of social work, too. It's not just about a retail store. Mm-hmm. Behind that retail store, which is what generates the funds, mm-hmm. Plus fundraising that they do, there's a social organization that plays a very important role for a variety of their clients in the community.
And your students need that.
Some of our students need that. We have one of the areas that I'm so excited about is we have a program at one of our colleges that predominantly focuses on young women who are homeless, have a child, and I know you're going to go on break, so maybe I can finish up.
We'll come right back to it. Bruce Leslie, please stand by at Alamo College is with us from San Antonio. Paul Brown in Zanesville, Ohio, Zane State. Pam Ettinger with Bunker Hill Community College. We're talking about community colleges on the front line of American change, adaptation, struggle these days. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about community colleges on the front lines of American change, American adaptation, in many ways, American struggle. Lots of people talking about community college. George Bush used to talk about community colleges in State of the Union addresses. So did President Obama last week in his State of the Union address. Here's the president.
That means more on-the-job training and more apprenticeships that set a young worker on an upward trajectory for life. It means connecting companies to community colleges that can help design training to fill their specific needs.
And the vice president's wife, Dr. Jill Biden, works at a community college, Northern Virginia Community College in Annandale, Virginia. Last week she talked in Rochester, New York, at Monroe Community College and talked about her students. Here's Jill Biden.
Helping people get good-paying jobs so that they can support their families. Giving them skills that they need to grow in careers that they love. Giving experienced workers a renewed sense of hope and confidence.
There's the role, she says. Here's her description of the students.
I've seen moms and dads juggling full-time jobs and childcare. Return to school to move into new careers or reach the next level in their fields. And I've seen recent high school graduates take another step on the road to a four-year degree. And I've seen veterans returning to their families and then going back to school.
Lots of things unraveling in the country in recent years. Community colleges, right there, trying to knit them back together. A terrific group of community college leaders with us today from Zanesville, Ohio, Paul Brown, president of Zane State College. From San Antonio, Texas, Bruce Leslie, chancellor of Alamo Colleges, 5 campuses, 90,000 students, 5 schools. Pam Ettinger is with us from Bunker Hill Community College, president there in Charlestown in Boston, Massachusetts. Paul, Bruce, Pam, lots of response here already from listeners online. Deborah saying, community college saved me. Would not have been able to get a higher education without it. Andy says, I see community colleges as the way of the future. High school education doesn't cut it anymore. It isn't necessary for everyone to have a 4-year degree. Community colleges provide a cheaper education while maintaining a high standard, more jobs-oriented. They react to the local economy more readily than universities. And here's interesting. Patrick says, I live in the second poorest county in New York State. I have the money to move, but don't want to. Those who graduate from nearby 4-year colleges leave upon graduation. Patrick writes, those who graduate from community colleges stay and help slow the decline of this area. Bruce, that sort of infrastructure for local economies role, very important in the community college satchel.
Yes, and I was telling you before the break that we're facilitators, and I think Pam said that really well. We bring together industry, social organizations, school districts, universities. We're right in the hub of all that. And I was mentioning a program. We had a group of women in this community several years ago organize themselves into an annual fundraising luncheon every December, and they raised thousands of dollars to pay for typically women, but some men, who are single parents. Often they dropped out of school at 15, 16 because they got pregnant. They've, in many cases, been on the street or in very low-wage jobs. They don't have a high school diploma, so we're helping them get their GED. They have to pay for the GED test, so this money is giving them the scholarship just to pay to take the test for the GED because they don't have that resource. Then they're giving scholarships to these individuals to come to the Alamo colleges. Many of them are not only finishing their associate degree, going on to baccalaureate and above, they're now paying taxes, contributing, working in the community, adding to the social fabric of this community. And it all grew out of this group of community women that saw this need for these young people, dropped out of school, but having great potential. And every luncheon when these young women come and speak before the audience about what they've been through, it just draws tears right out of your eye ducts because they're so passionate about, it's for my kid that I'm doing this. Not for me, it's for my child.
We've got exactly that kind of student calling right now from Mallard, Iowa. Christina's calling. Christina, you're on the air. What's your story?
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Good. Oh, you know, I was... At 18, I joined the Iowa Army National Guard, and so I received a lot of the financial aid, but I became a single mom at 21, and then 14 months later, a second boy came along, and my only option at the time was to do community college because I was set into my community. My kids were special needs. My oldest is autistic, mm-hmm. and he was in a really good program. The local school has a wonderful special needs program, so I stayed tight, and I decided to go to college up at the local community college, and I moved from there into Buena Vista. A local Buena Vista college has their four-year program set up locally. So I got my four-year degree in elementary education with a minor in special ed and pre-K.
And how has it worked out for you, Christina? Has it put you on the path to a career?
You know, it has, to a point. I actually got married the year I graduated because it took me a while to graduate. I'm one of those long, it took me a long time because I was going to school, raising the kids, you know, and doing everything else. So, and then I spent a year overseas, too, so that kind of put me a year off of graduating. But I was 30 by the time I finally graduated, and I'm a full-time substitute teacher locally. So,
Christina, without that, did it give you hope that that institution was there? Without it, where would you have found your feet?
Well, I was actually when I became a mom, I decided to become a certified nurse's aide to support my boys.
Yeah,
because around here the jobs are very minimal unless you want to do a minimum wage job, and CNAs get paid pretty good around here. So that was my first real option. So I went to the CNA. Certificate isn't really all that long. It's a few weeks. So I went and did my CNA certificate first, which is also community college based. And but at that point, I knew I didn't want to do that forever. It was not my passion in life. And so, if I hadn't had the local, Buena Vista, the local four-year college based out of the two-year college, I never would have got it.
A first foothold right there for Christina. I appreciate your call. One more right here. Adam in Cookeville, Tennessee. Adam, what's your story? You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
So I'm 35, and years ago, back in high school, I virtually flunked out and kind of spent my 20s meandering around and, playing in rock bands and, doing a bit of traveling, but not doing much for my life. And I decided to go back to school at 30. Of course, I could not get into any four-year university, so I started at a community college, and it really taught me how to be a student. And I just took a bunch of various classes, realized that I had kind of a knack and an interest in math and science. I'm now at a four-year engineering university where I'm getting my degree in mechanical engineering. I'm on scholarship. I've been lucky enough to be a member of all the different, honor societies, and, I really attribute kind of my success so far, at least, to the community college. And, I hope someday later on in life to be able to go back and teach at community college to kind of give back what I've gained through my experience there.
Adam, that would be terrific, and I appreciate your story. Pam, put us in your shoes. It could be you or Bruce or Paul Brown in Zanesville. Your perspective on what's going on with education in this country, what's going on with families, what's going on with our economy, what do you see sitting there as president of Bunker Hill Community College that we ought to all be aware of?
Sometimes I look over the college and I say we have 50% of all the undergraduates in the community colleges in this country. That really is the anchor for the future. As much as, you know, we have elite colleges and so on and folks doing true leadership work.
Roll the tape back. 50% of all those in higher education in the country, undergrad, are in community colleges?
Community colleges have 50% of all the undergraduates in this country.
Okay, so that's a huge number. Do you see in that in those incoming waves of students? What are their circumstances, their readiness or lack of readiness, their attitudes and outlook? What do they tell you about our country?
That we are at a critical point. We are an immigrant country, and a large portion of our immigrants right now are not workplace literate. They do not have social mobility, and I see the community college as the remedy to that. In that we are not going to be able to achieve the kind of living standards that our parents had or I have if we don't have the next generation prepare to be able to maintain that living standard through their work, through their social engagement, their civic engagement. So I believe the community colleges and how well we do in doing our job will paint a large portion of the picture of who we will be a generation or two from now as a country.
Paul Brown, give us the benefit of your perspective on those incoming students. What do they tell you? What should they tell us about this country?
Well, first, from a national perspective, Tom, I think we have, you know, there's no question that we have a skills gap in this country, particularly at the what they call the mid-skills jobs, which are the technical jobs in the country. So we have to fulfill those particular jobs, and they're, you know, I think estimates go up as high as $3 million employment gap. And then the other thing that we address at community colleges is an opportunity gap. We're giving people an opportunity to get an education that, you know, several years ago would never have happened. So I think we have to, again, from a national perspective, we have to close the opportunity gap in order to close the skills gap. Just to give you an idea of how jobs have changed in this country in the last 50 years. 50 years ago, if you rewind 50 years ago, about 60% of the jobs in this country required a high school only degree. About 20% required a bachelor's or higher degree. You fast forward now, and that's completely flipped. I mean, 60%, two-thirds of the jobs nowadays require some college, but less than a bachelor's degree. Still, bachelor's or higher is about 20%. And then the 15% only require a high school degree. So, you know, when we're talking about skills gap, and we're talking about this country, that's how this country is changing. Our country is requiring a lot more sophisticated technical skills, and your community colleges are the ones that are supplying those.
Bruce Leslie, what did your perspective tell you about how this country is doing, strengths, weaknesses, when you look at the students coming in, their readiness, their lack of readiness, their social environment?
Well, the social protections really aren't there. These individuals really deserve tremendous credit because they're really struggling against the lack of food, lack of transportation, lack of housing, and the kinds of social fabric things that are so important to a community. So we're providing that, again, with our partners. I want to add one other kind of context here. Mm-hmm. All of us, I know, would agree that one of the great things about community colleges is the faculty that we have and the staff. The boards that are so focused on helping students be successful. Our faculty don't want to be at universities because they want to focus on helping to nurture the inherent value and skills that these people have within them, but just haven't had the opportunity to learn them. to be able to develop them and to be able to produce them. So we have a culture within our community colleges that is very different than a university culture. We're very different organizations. You said earlier we're very responsive to the business community, but we're also very responsive to the social community.
I mean, that gives you a perspective that we're really interested in right here on what's going on deep in the fabric, and not so deep, just right out there in this country. They may get glossed over in all the fancy brochures from four-year colleges. Jamie in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Jamie, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
So my story was, I was 16 when I had my daughter. I've always been single, never been married. It's just been the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually went to two community colleges. I didn't go right out of high school. I did graduate from high school a semester early, actually. But I just felt like community college really opened the door for me. It took me 6 years to get my undergraduate, so I went to two community colleges initially, and then I transferred to a four-year college. So that took me 6 years to get my bachelor's in biology, minor in chemistry. But I'm currently in a biomedical sciences graduate program, and so I'm working really hard still to complete that. But I just feel like, you know, in trying to look back when I was, you know, 18 years old, 20 years old, when I was just starting school, it's not just the learning process that can be intimidating. It's the enrollment. It's, of course, the financial issue when you're a single mother, not to mention child care and taking care of that. And so I just feel like community college at that time was very much more tangible to me than maybe trying to succeed in that feat of that four-year college that you might not be able to pay for initially.
More accessible, right there and ready for you and ready to take you in, even when you didn't know exactly maybe what was going on or the way to do it.
Right.
Jamie, congratulations on all the progress you've made on that path. I mean, you're shaking your head in the studio, Pam, that this is often the case. You've got students coming in who just, they don't know where to put their foot to take that next step, and there you are.
Right. So I always refer to student success as, you know, which is one of the key words, as a three-legged stool. Of course, the academic preparation is important. So you offer developmental education to get them to college level. You get them to being able to transfer, like Jamie is able to transfer and do better. The other two legs is really the financial one, to make sure that they have enough money and not take on too much debt while they're doing this, so that we do not, produce a whole society of debt-ridden people. And then also creating the social circle in which they can operate. We all learn better as a cohort. We all learn better when they're friends learning with us. We all learn better when they're teachers next to us. So if you look at the kind of programs we're running at Bunker Hill, right, the single stop program, which is across the nation now, something that we need to spread, is about financial literacy and emergency assistance. LifeMap, which originated in Valencia Community College in Florida, is about building the six domains that will wrap around the student: educational planning, financial planning, social connections, and so on. And we build this into the curriculum. So as much as we're trying to raise academics, you know, academicians and transfer students, we're also building the capability of navigating the world.
Does it feel strange to you that you need to do that? Do you sit back and think, why aren't my students coming with this preloaded, pre-prepared with this readiness? Or has that always been the function of higher education?
I think higher education has evolved and grown. I think this is part of a nation's realizing that folks don't come ready-made. We are a diverse society. We are a democracy. And therefore, our fabric, our personal fabric, has different needs to get rewoven again. So we give what is necessary.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about community colleges on the front lines of American change, adaptation, struggle. Three leaders of community colleges with us from around the country. Paul Brown, president of Zane State College in Ohio. Bruce Leslie, chancellor of five community colleges in Texas, Alamo Colleges, joining us from San Antonio. And Pam Ettinger joins me in the studio, president of Bunker Hill Community College, Charlestown, Boston. 14,000 students there in day, evening, weekend, web-based programs. Bruce Leslie, here's a question from a listener online. It says, last we heard, some 44% of entering college, university freshmen required some degree of remediation. I don't know about that number, but what percentage, he asks, of freshmen or incoming community college students, technical schools and so on, require any degree of remediation? You've got 90,000 students, Bruce, so that gives you a pretty good perspective. What would you say to that question?
Well, for us, it's about 70%. Again, I think that's more typical in an urban environment that you're going to have so many students that many of whom have been out of school for a while. Again, as I said, they're adult learners, so they've forgotten a lot. So you have those that are underprepared and those that are just have forgotten. There's a huge national agenda now across all of education, and the community colleges are really in the forefront of this. Streamlining developmental education using data from research that we're all involved in. There's a program many of us are involved in called Achieving the Dream, which has been around now for about 10 years that focuses on really analyzing internally your cohorts of students, how well they're doing, and then developing strategies to help address each of those cohort needs. So community colleges are much more engaged in understanding their student cohorts than other forms of institutions. We're very, very tightly connected with our school districts. We have 38 independent school districts here in the region we serve. We serve an 8-county region, and we meet with them on a regular basis, the superintendents and the board chairs and my board and my leadership team. Meet with them on a regular basis to keep driving deeper into the schools ways in which we can avoid students having to be unprepared to take remediation, doing that in the schools where it really should be done in partnership with the high school faculty. We have early college high schools now that are graduating great numbers of students with great success, but it's a combined high school-college program, so students are literally graduating from college at 18 years old, and wow. Of course, for them, it's free. Mm-hmm. Just real quick, our young woman who graduated from one of our three early college high schools this past May said, not only am I the first in my family to graduate from high school, but I'm the first in my family to graduate from college and before my senior prom, and she got a full ride to the University of Rochester in New York. So
that's pretty great.
You know, we're doing some really exciting things in community colleges. I tell my colleagues here that this is the most exciting time in my 30-plus years as a leader in community colleges because we're really looking deeply in how to help these students be successful.
Paul Brown, in Ohio, with those high levels of remediation intervention required, do you scratch your head sometimes? And we all know K-12 is having trouble in this country. Do you say, you know, what's K-12 doing when I've got the, I don't know, 40, 50, 60, 70% of students needing remediation?
Well, yeah, Tom, our numbers are about the same. We're about 70% that need it. The student needs at least one developmental course in the basic competencies of reading, writing, and math. Our feeling is that we do a good job at taking a student from where they are and making them college ready and then getting them to the finish line. So, I mean, our perspective is that we're all in this together, and Bruce alluded to the fact that he's doing some things, and we are too, and I'm sure Pam is as well. Well, we're going down into the high schools, and we're trying to help the high schools better prepare the students so that they're college ready. We have, again, to piggyback on what Bruce said, we have we have this slogan that says start here and go anywhere, and I believe that's what we aspire to every day, to give our students an opportunity for as many options as life can present them with a good education. So I think we're a conduit to a good job or a conduit to a university education. And we're all working together to make our system a lot stronger. So rather than scratch my head, I'd say we're being creative and trying to do some things that will help. We have a couple of courses, free courses to students that are below college, even the developmental level. They are on the literacy level. We have some free courses that we call Math Start and a Jump Start to College, and those have been very successful in students coming to the college, them feeling like they're integrated into the college culture, and therefore their motivation and success rates are much greater than you know, taking a literacy program somewhere else.
You can't make the door open much wider than that. Free and come as you are. That's a way to get on track, we hope anyway. Max in New Orleans is calling. Max, thanks, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I've been observing community colleges, studying them, working in them for almost 40 years, and I'm part of that love affair with the community college, therefore. I'm also, you might call, a loving critic of the community college. And I'm hearing all this good stuff that we're doing. Same kind of thing we were talking about 40 years ago, really, just different forms. And I'm struck by the fact that you asked a question which has yet really to be answered, and that is a question that really concerns me and has concerned me for many years now. And that is a question of the relationship between community colleges, higher education, democracy. I think in many ways that particularly community college presidents over the last 40 years have betrayed the higher education mission of the community college. And they betrayed it because it's easier not to deal with it. It's easier to deal with economic development.
Explain what you mean, Max. When you say betray, I really want to understand exactly what you mean by that, Max.
Yeah. It seems to me that the function, whether you go back to Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, you go back to Plato even, right?
Mm-hmm.
The function of what we call higher education should be to prepare citizens for their community, whatever that community may be.
Yes.
And, you know, so there are many parts to that preparation. But one is citizenship. And I think that's where the community college has failed abysmally.
How?
Particularly in the question
Why?
Of literacy.
Okay.
Particularly in the question of literacy. You know, the failure rate is so much greater than the success rate. But we don't talk about that because it doesn't sell. And we like to sell the community college, which is, you know, much to sell. There's much to sell.
Mm-hmm.
But we have also pulled back from that higher education function, from that function of preparing our citizens for a true democracy.
Max, are you saying too much job training and not enough broader education? Is that embedded in your observation?
Well, that's embedded in it. But it's sometimes mistaken as some kind of a conflict. I don't see it as a conflict. I see it as one thing. The two go together. They are not one or the other, and that's what's happened, is we've separated them out.
And are you saying that there's failure because not enough community college students actually achieve the just basic literacy they need, or more than that, Max?
Well, I'm saying it's a leadership function. I think that there is more and more CEOs heading community colleges and fewer academic leaders. And the result is, and because their ties are with the economic community, their ties are with the business community, that's where the support comes for community colleges very often, that their tendency is to think like businessmen. Let me train people for a specific job rather than worry about the whole person.
Max, let us dive into all that, Max, and I'm so glad you raised it all. Pam Ettinger, what about it? Community colleges, yes, they work very closely with business. Very often businesses will say exactly what they need in terms of training, and community colleges often respond. Is there a risk, you hear Max's complaint from New Orleans, of turning out maybe worker bees instead of fully shaped, fully formed citizens?
I think Max's concern is absolutely justified. In some ways, we do have to teach folks the technical skills so that they can make a living in order to become part of society and engage. Part of the community college's role is to assist our business folks to understand that they don't want a widget maker. If someone cannot learn how to learn and have the critical thinking skills and the creative thinking skills to go on to the next job where they'll have to learn a different job again. You know, folks change jobs 6 times in their lifetime at least. So Max is right. If we're just doing job training, then I'm not doing my job. However, we cannot underestimate the power of having that first job. So we need to develop the whole student.
Do your students want the whole development package? Do they come in wanting to read literature or history or whatever would constitute that larger envelope of learning, or do they just want job skills and out?
Some do and some don't, and I think it's part of the responsibilities, like Max says, of the leadership to say, yes, that part of the work skill is important, but you know what? Looking forward 10, 20 years for you to develop into your next stage as a citizen, you need to have English and the math and the sociology and the psychology. It is a real balancing act. And I think part of the rhetoric of community college that's been coming from the public sector has been jobs, jobs, jobs. I can assure you, the folks who hire our students don't just want a widget maker, and the conversation is more nuanced than that. We just have to overcome the rhetoric of technical training. We are comprehensive community colleges, and we should act and walk and teach like that.
Bruce Leslie in San Antonio, do you feel that tension between a job training role and a broader, deeper citizen creation role?
Yeah, Pam gave a really good response, and I really appreciate Max raising that issue. I brought together a group of faculty leaders this past year to discuss integration of the humanities and workforce programs. I mean, a humanities student is going to get a job ultimately, whether it's going to be an artist, a musician, whether it's going to be somebody in business or architecture, whatever. The four-year journey is necessary for them, and then for those who are on the two-year journey may go to a four-year institution as part of their degree-seeking prospects. But helping to create that full person is fundamentally right. Pam said that very effectively. And so I've got a group of faculty that we're exploring how to do that more effectively. Frankly, I've been frustrated over my long years in higher ed that even as a student in university and college, that we teach these things as silos. You know, English is over here, history is over there, soci is there, and psych is over there. We don't help students really understand how those are all integrated into creating that person who is a human being and fully understands what his or her role is in society. Many of us are involved in a national program around creating democracy. I've got faculty here at my institutions working on that, so we're very keen about ensuring that we are producing not just a student citizen, but a student leader. In fact, we're partnering with the Franklin Covey Company to roll out the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People as a framework to leadership development for every single one of our students here at the Alamo Colleges. So we're very keen about the issue that Max has raised.
7 Habits. I mean, I don't know how far that goes towards the traditional ideal of the full education, but it's certainly more than just the technical skills. George in Middle Grove, New York. George, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Certainly the community college mission you folks have been describing is critically important. But I see that community colleges hire a lot of adjunct faculty at relatively low salaries and no benefits. And I'm worried that that's creating an academic underclass. I wonder if your specialists there, administrators, have a concern about that and how they're approaching that issue.
Yeah, George, I appreciate your call. Paul, there's been a lot of talk around the country about adjunct professors, how little they can be paid. And you hear our caller worried about the creation of an underclass. Do you see community colleges helping drive that?
Number one, we need to be cost effective, but that doesn't drive the train for us. I know that in a rural area we have many more full-time faculty than we have adjunct or part-time faculty, because the bottom line is that we need the skills that these instructors can impart on the students, and therefore it's critical for us to have those skills, and you can't get them. You can't get engineering skills if a person is, during the day, if a person is typically working during the day. So, we have to balance those things. I've always thought that if recruited right and a adjunct faculty brings a lot to the classroom, particularly if you have a faculty member, now we're talking about a part-time faculty member who has the platform skills, the educational credentials, and now has the job experience. So they're out there, they're doing it, they're applying what they know in the workforce, and they can bring those experiences into the classroom.
And there's the ideal. The other side of that can be something like exploitation. Our time grows short. Pam, what about funding here? I mean, part of the reason people turn to adjunct faculty, because our caller is correct, there's a lot and they're not well paid, but there's sometimes not a lot of money in the system. If community colleges are playing this catch-all role, really patching up and knitting up lots of thin fabric in this country, what about the funding side of the equation? Is it there?
I think with all of the spotlights being shone now on the community colleges, most of our states are reconsidering the role of public higher ed. It's not just community colleges. It's also state colleges. In the state of Massachusetts, we have so many eminent elite colleges that sometimes when they look at education in Massachusetts, they see that as the spotlight, whereas the state and the community colleges and the public universities are really holding up a great deal of the structures. And I believe that the conversation, the funding conversation from the state side is beginning to address that. You know, rather we have enough dollars to go around, it's another story.
I mean, the talk has been the other direction, that it's all cut, cut, cut in these austere times of the last few years.
I'm seeing a return. I'm really seeing a return in both conversations and dialogue as well as actual dollars, and I hope it persists.
Bruce, in Texas, do you see your state legislators looking at community colleges and understanding we've got to put the beef behind these?
Yeah, I don't know whether there'll be a lot more money coming down. In fact, this last session they added a competency-based role for us, so we're measured on our performance now as part of our funding stream. We're very supportive of that initiative, but I don't see a lot of money coming. And, of course, there's a great deal of pressure not to raise tuition and not to raise local taxes.
Heads up on that whole front. Bruce Leslie in San Antonio, Alamo Colleges. Paul Brown, Zane State. Pam Ettinger with Bunker Hill Community College. Thanks to all three of you for being with us this hour. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.